beings. We are so proud of your journey to complete your DNA upgrade sequence.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Practical Spiritual Advice by Infinite You. I am your host, Harold Aho Now. I am a practical spiritual advisor and community activist in the city of San Antonio, Texas. And I'm just coming through to like tell a story and kind of lead by example for some that have not found their story yet. I've come to find that the story that I bring forth for, to you, to everyone, to as many as it'll open ears for this and an open heart, because some of this stuff is pretty it's pretty crazy, and you gotta have like this open heart to like understand like my story is my story and it's not your story, and I'm not trying to make my story your story, which means I'm not trying to put my belief system on you if you don't quite resonate with everything that you hear. Now, with that being said, this is episode number 3. And in the last two episodes, they were storytelling episodes. So go back, listen to those. I'm not going to get into the details of that other than it starts out at 11-11-11 and the codes/inspiration that was Sedona, Arizona, and a whole spiritual gathering and stuff. And one thing I forgot to mention or get into the details of is me. You know, some people don't know me. I've been in this kind of spiritual awakening for 11 years, 12 years now. And I just imagine that I've told everyone everything and you all know it all. You're a bunch of know-it-alls, but you're not. And you would like to know it all, or as much as you stomach. No, I'm just kidding. It's not going to be gross. It's going to be inspiring and give you hope. I know it will if you come with an open heart and an open mind and allow yourself the transmission of this information. And so this episode is dedicated to who am I, Harold Aho Now, or born as Harold Gunther Honau Jr. I am a junior, right? So my father, he was born, it's not a common name, right? And so that's a German name. My father had me at the age of 48. He is German. My grandparents, they're both straight from Germany. And, my grandfather served for Germany in World War I and then left there after that. And him and my grandmother moved to San Antonio, Texas. He built a business and they started having children. And my grandfather's things is that he did ornamental ironwork. So there's this like art that's been in our family for a long time. And he's got an autobiography that he wrote, or I have the autobiographies since passed away. My father also when I was 16, I'm 45 now. And so let's just start kind of from the beginning, right? So I was born 11/22/77 at 11 p.m. on the dot in Cameron, Texas, which is a little bit a ways from Temple, Texas. And all these things will play their part as we go forward with everything, where I've been piecing my history together and seeing some synchronicities and magic within the things that I'm going through now. And so it's pretty cool. And so anyway, born in Cameron, raised in Temple, Texas, and it wasn't long after I was born that my parents had my younger sister, 2.5 years after me, and that is Pamela. She's mad at me right now. Whenever she listens to this, if she ever does, we'll see. This is funny, the whole, awakening process seems to stir up things, especially within family. And I just so happened to be from a large family. There were 6 before me and then my sister. So there was a total of 8 children, 6 from another father and me and my younger sister from same parents. And I don't remember how old I was exactly when my parents split up. And I do come from a broken home. Early on, I do not remember any times of having a family dynamic with my mom and my father. I only remember them as separate parents. And so take that for what it's worth. Some have similar experiences. Some went through the heartache of watching your parents that you love, and whether they had a good time and then they drifted apart, or they were always having a hard time at keeping the family together. You know, we all go through these things. And so that's part of my experience, is just not ever seeing my parents together. Can you imagine? My dad, oh my goodness, he came into the relationship with a woman that, my mom, that had 6 children already. What? Who does that? Oh man, I'm pretty close. My partner had 3 before we got, before we got together, and then we had 2 extra, and I had 1 before, so we're a whole blended family of 6 right now. So we play these games, right? Growing up and experiencing particular childhood things, and so, some of the stuff that I experienced as a child was childhood was a little paranormal. And I have one instance of seeing some type of a witch lady in the back laundry room while I was playing with my Dukes of Hazzard car, and that'll be a small story for another time. And just really odd things happening in the house that my parents separated in. And finding out later from a friend in elementary school, after the separation, after we had all moved from the house, that his he lived there. And during that time, all I can remember, and I mean, I could be making it up, I don't freaking know, but from what I remember on this, I remember him telling me in the cafeteria, I have like a vivid memory of it, but I mean, as children, I've had different stories in my head that come to pass. I'm like, oh, that wasn't this lifetime. That was another lifetime, another memory. So, what I'm saying? Take it for what it's worth. From what I remember, this child friend of mine told me that his parents were separating in the same house. And, it just makes sense. The house had some particular energy about it that disrupted families or whatnot. And, not to say that a man jumping into a family with 6 children wasn't going to be disruptive in itself. So after we have some paranormal experiences and that home and the separation, what happens is me and my younger sister are mainly living with our father, which is like a few blocks down the road in Temple, Texas. And, one energy staying with our father was this safe, net that we had, in a sense. And come to look back on things, I wasn't particularly safe. There were some creepy people in the neighborhood that did some weird things, and I remember being touched inappropriately, and I don't know why or how I was eluded to sit down with this person. I can't even remember if they were a teenager or 20s. I know they weren't super old. And how they got into the yard, and so again, we all go through things and we experience things to know what's real, what's not, what we can validate through our own life that other people may be experiencing or have experienced. So paranormal, molestation, but broken family. The, my dad's side is the German side, and it's a large family with a lot of cousins and stuff like that. And they are all mainly upper middle class or like middle class. And so it wasn't ever a concern for money or things when with my father. Now with my mother, it was a different story. We were, didn't have a lot. All of us cramped into a home, dirty, roaches, food stamps, all those things. And then, you know, her being still, like, I think my mother was like 20 years younger than my father. So when they separated, he was 40, like 51, 52, maybe 53 years old. He never was with another woman after that. Unless he snuck off when he would, like, right after that. But after he got to San Antonio, Texas, which is coming up soon in the story, he was never with him, just to put a little thing on it. But my mother, being younger, was, you know, pretty promiscuous. And, you know, us being close to a military base and a lake for the local girls to go meet the GIs and stuff. And my sisters being, you know, older, like teenagers, and yeah, let's go meet the GIs. And like, mom's like, yeah, and aunt and her friends, and it just wasn't like the best scene for children. And so two different sides of the coin, or sides of the fence, or sides of the track, if you will, between mom and dad. And, you know, during this time, most of it is spent with my dad until he almost died a couple times, and I kind of saved his life riding my bike to get his Primatene Mist. Yeah, just, you know, he had lung cancer and emphysema, smoked cigarettes forever, and he's ex-Navy, was in the Navy for 22 years, and, you know, that was just part of life, and so it finally got to him. And by the time we're around and he's separated, he's going through a lot of health issues and on an oxygen tank, and, you know, one time woke up in the middle of the night saying, that's it, he can't breathe, and he ran out of his Primatene Mist, which is an inhaler that opens the airways in the lungs, and he had run out, and I had to hop on my bike at night, and I don't even know what time it was, to the 7-Eleven, the convenience store down the road, a few blocks away, and get some with the check, and haul ass back, and, you know, he obviously lived. And then, you know, I can't remember exactly what happened that led him to needing to go to San Antonio and stay closer with my aunt, his sister, who was living there, that could help him. Plus, the military hospitals were more equipped with, you know, things that they can do for him. And so, you know, I can't remember exactly how old we must have been, like 7 or something. We had to stay with our mom for a little while and for a few years. And, you know, like personally endure, but there were things that weren't the coolest to have. You know, her boyfriend that she finally got with was abusive, and they were both alcoholics, and she would get arrested in DUIs, and, you know, he would get into fights, and then she was a half owner of a bar, this other guy that was a fucking a molester, you know, and I don't know how many of my brothers and sisters he touched or whatever. Definitely not my oldest. My brother Johnny was already old enough, he would beat his ass. And if he would have known what he was doing to some of the other, you know, they would have definitely fucked him. So anyway, that dude was a creep. And so, you know, these are like things that are kind of like brushed under the rug in a sense, like where you're just a child and you don't know how to fend for yourself. And like, you know, just for example, my mom is literally in a fight with her boyfriend in another room, and this dude's like trying to comfort me and my sister by slowly like putting his hands in places that weren't appropriate until we started like pulling away, and we're like, what the fuck, dude? Like, there, we want them to stop, like, who do we call? And he's not fucking helping. It's just ridiculous, right? So anyway, like, these are just the things that we go through, right? It's part of the story of us. So let's go ahead and dip out of that part and then start moving into my father starts to get better in San Antonio. And so at the age of 12, my sister and I, we moved to San Antonio and lived with him in a one-bedroom apartment. And while he sleeps in the living room, me and my sister take over the large one bedroom and sleep on both ends and have, you know, our own beds and stuff like that. And I came right into San Antonio going into middle school and being very close to the only metaphysical store in town that was only 2 years in its creation. that plays a big part in my spiritual awakening and the people that I've met and stuff like that. So I didn't know that as soon as I got to San Antonio and started living here, that the school I would go to and spend most of my time at was a block and a half away from this place with metaphysics and crystals and spiritual awakening and people doing energy work and stuff. So that's pretty cool. And then high school was another thing. Like middle school, I was popular, but not like the most popular, right? Like I got along with a lot of different people and had a lot of fun in middle school. And then by the time we get into high school, we're playing football in middle school and then go into high school and playing football. And the funny thing about my high school, so the really cool thing about high school, it's Robert E. Lee High School, and right before I'm going into high school, the school decides to change its name during the summertime from, or at least not its name, but the mascot from the Rebels, which is like this volunteer, you know, not a volunteer, but a Confederate guy that would shoot a cannon at halftime, and it was like a cool thing. And nobody looked at, I mean, whatever, I'm fucking half Hispanic, half German. Like, I'm not looking, mind you, I look more Hispanic than German. And so most of my life, I feel more Hispanic. And I got to tell people, like, hey, yo, on the back end, I'm half white. Like, you don't know, but I'm half white. So this school changes from the Rebels as its mascot to the Volunteers. And that was just, like, super... As a football player, wanting to put fear into your opponents and have them submit, you want to have someone submit to a rebel. Like, you want to be a rebel, right? Like, that's the bad boy. And, you know, and not a volunteer. Like, oh, I volunteer to be here. Like, no, you want a rebel. Like, those are just literally two opposite sides of the same. That's so crazy, right? But, you know, little do we know, my soul, I'm a volunteer. And many of us on here are that are going to listen to this and be following along with this whole story. We're volunteers. Our soul came here to assist in an evolution of a template, of a holographic matrix. It's a game that we're playing to dive deep down into dark things and bring in the light. And we volunteered to do this. So anyway, the school changed names for me. So high school was a lot of fun. I was a jock. Again, was very charismatic. I've always been charismatic. As soon as I jumped out of my shy phase as a child, I didn't lose my virginity till I was 17. And, you know, so that's another thing. Like, you know, for me, it was a big shift from being a virgin and chasing the you know, opposite gender, like, not chasing it, but putting it on this, I don't even want to say that word. I was going to say putting it on a pedestal, but, like, the way I would look at the opposite sex was different than when I lost, after I lost my virginity. I don't know how to explain it. And it wasn't like a bad thing. It was just, I, for instance, there was a girl that I was really, really head over heels for a long time. And I was a virgin. And I would do all kinds of things, drive all across town to give her, deliver her donuts. And she had a boyfriend. Like, she had a baby daddy and a child. And I would help her, like, pick up her child. Like, it was crazy. And I was just this dude. Didn't get nothing. No kisses, no, you know, nothing. I was a virgin. And she thought I was, she didn't think I was, she didn't know I was a virgin also. I told her, I was like, no, I've been with this many girls. And, oh, okay, just because I want to be a virgin. Little did I know, come to find out when we finally did something and told her, I was like, hey, I lied. She was like, oh shit, if you would have told me you were a virgin, we would have done this a long time ago. So, anyway, but there was a different energy after we had sex and or after I had sex in general, because it wasn't with, my first time was not with her. it was with someone else. And, you know, we're going to get into a little TMI, but we're talking about high school here, and we might as well jump into it. Like, hormones are raging, and, you know, you got a lot of things going on in the high school years of your life. And so mine was selling weed. I was actually, you know what? Let's rewind just a little bit more. One of the, like, really crazy things that happened to me as a teenager was I hit a 14-year-old boy while driving my car. I hit him with my car, right? I hit a 14-year-old with my car. I didn't even slow down. Didn't even get a chance to get off of the gas, right? But it was all an accident. He popped out of nowhere, and the way it happened was just, like, super crazy, and he did damage to my car. Did damage to him, obviously, right? But he lived. Just so you know, he lived. I don't know how he's doing now. Like, I don't, you know. So, point being, there's some pretty crazy things that happened, you know, along this time with, you know, hitting a child, you know, even before that, seeing like a spider being inside of the apartment with my father and my sister when we first moved in my middle school time before we got to high school, right? Like, I saw some spider being that was about 4 feet big with a human head, right? Just like I can see you and you, anyone, right? I can't see you at home, but I mean, just like 3D, right? It was real as day. And so, just some very odd experiences that are paranormal, seeing things. I wasn't connecting to dead people and stuff like that. This is very, like, sporadic. So it's almost like swifting. Is that the word? Is that the correct word to use? It's, like, very, like, elusive, these paranormal experiences where they just play in the background and come out during special times when you want to tell stories that, you know, with all your siblings, like, hey, remember this? And, you know, so those are things that we would talk about often, like, hey, yeah, Uncle Johnny said that one of those figurines was floating in the air and you could hear a voice and all this stupid shit. I'm like, hold on. And I asked my uncle, and he's like, no, that, I don't know who said that. And I'm, so, you know, you hear stories with a lot of siblings. So that was one of my own personal experiences. And, you know, my father passed away when I was 16. And, you know, I already had my own car before he passed away because, I mean, he was disabled, so I needed a vehicle. And had my 89 Chevy Cavalier and immediately started putting, like, sound system in it and fucking with, you know, frequencies and vibrations and, like, feeling the boom in my car and, like, really loving it. And so I was bass head, yeah. And just like this whole high school experience with all these different, you know, things that happened with experimenting with LSD. And then after my father passes away, smoking weed. And after he passed away, my mom, you know, picked up, you know, right where he left off and really shifted her whole life to come and stay with me and my sister and guide us through the last few years of, like, high school and stuff. Well, for her, I was on, you know, only a couple years out. And only a couple years in, and I'm ready to get out of the house. So high school, 17 years old, you know. Was I a junior? Was I 16? I swear, I know I had to be 17. I don't know why I feel like I did not wait until senior year to lose my virginity, but maybe. Not 100%. So foggy back then. But anyway, for those that, you know, have seen my stuff in other platforms, you know, I've got a YouTube channel, InfiniteU77, and that has a lot of the older stuff, and that'll be updated. So you got some podcasts on there with my friend Romy. And his podcast, Red Pill or Poor. You'll see some of the old episodes on that with him and I. And then we also have some older videos of me and the beginning of my spiritual awakening. And so you can see some of that stuff. But a few of these different places are going to have information that'll be show you these different things. So some that know me will know that I'm into human design. And so in my human design, there's some very potent things that have to deal with, like, sexuality and, you know, how I'm inviting to be intimate. And some of these things, like I've, you know, as I get readings or I hear people talk about human design, and as I learn about myself, I'm like, holy moly, this is crazy. Because, you know, you hear a lot of stories of when people lose their virginity and how guys are like, yeah, man, I couldn't even, like, as soon as we went in, you know, and they just, like, it was a short-lived experience. Well, mine is quite the opposite, you know, and it was something that felt natural, and it's a place of bliss to be in a lovemaking state and that type of energy. It's in my pattern now that I look into it. I'm like, wow, no wonder that was kind of like a thing for me to be promiscuous and not be too difficult to invite the opposite sex in to be intimate with me. And, you know, so looking at things now, I'm like, wow, okay, no wonder. And so I had a pattern of being kind of like a playboy, but never, I wasn't a bad boy. I just, you know, the ladies liked me and stuff. So after we get out of high school, immediately, because I didn't graduate. So that summer, after I didn't graduate, and All right. So after I started smoking weed, a lot of my friends had other friends that they were buying some from. And so we would go in on some stuff, and then we get a little, you know, I'd get some and I'd roll up joints and I would take them to school. I emptied out hollowed out a novel, and I didn't read books like that. I wasn't a book reader. So I'm walking around school with like a book that's hollowed out and has joints all rolled in it. And, you know, we would skip, and by senior year, I'm having fun with the ladies and we're skipping and getting high all the time, and school is not a priority. I'm not doing football anymore. And, you know, it was like I was on the verge of like, yo, I'm ready to get the fuck out into the real world. And, yeah, because I was carrying weed around with me and thinking I was Mr. Billy Badass, I started getting into trouble with the law and, you know, getting arrested and them finding little roaches. And, you know, then that led to probation. And then probation, you know, I'm there. It's not part of my program to be held in like this. And so to show up and have to report and pay fines and all these different things, it was not easy for me to stay in line with that. And so at times I would, not show, you know, just different things like that. I would have warrants or even other little like random traffic tickets. I'd forget to go to the court date or something, or pay it, or not have insurance and things like that. And so all these stupid little things, I would go in and out of jail, excuse me. And that was like kind of a cycle for me for a little bit. And it was not fun. And I got to know the system and be able to see how I could adapt. I mean, at one time, I think at 18, that summer after I got out of high school is when I spent about a month in jail because I pissed dirty. And they were like, we're going to throw the book at you. You got to go here, and then you're going to go to boot camp. But if you do good here, then blah, blah, blah. So I'm in jail for 28 days, and I'm helping out in the kitchen, so I'm cleaning and all this shit, and I'm hanging out with all these different people. And you know, I had my cellie was this guy that used to be in the mafia, Mexican mafia and stuff. And he's family now, and he's like, good, but they respect him. And so, you know, because him and I were in there, nobody messed with me. He was a super cool dude. And, you know, that I got out of there, like it seemed like another whole chapter of my life, just 28 days. And I got out, and I wanted to kind of like rearrange my life and take more priority in the things and the people that I felt served me best and saw me and appreciated me. And so I had time to reflect in there. And when I got out, I told the girl that I was seeing at the time, and I was really, you know, head over heels for her. But she didn't want to like be in this like relationship titled as that. And I was like, man, well, I've already had my fun. I want to kind of like get into something. You know, I really want you. And she's like, nope, not quite ready. And I'm like, well, then I don't want to do anything with you then. I'd rather just be like on my own and like go have my fun. Like, I don't want to have to worry about you anymore if you don't want to be this 100%. So I was cool either way. And I was actually really cool either way. But just, I like to get my cake and eat it too. And so, you know, after that decision, we're not really talking. I mean, I don't even know how many days it was. It couldn't have been long. Couldn't have been a week. And I'm getting drunk with a friend, and he tells me a dumb story that I have to tell her. And it was just an excuse for me to go over there and for us to have sex and, you know, stuff like that. And so she's like really putting me off, like, no, you can't. I'm like, where are you at? She's like, at home, going to sleep. I'm like, okay, do you work tomorrow? She's like, no, not till this time. Or not until this time. I'm like, oh, you're... So she's like telling me shit that I'm like, I'm busting apart. I'm like, okay, well then you don't need to wake up early and you don't need to do this and you don't need to do that. So I'm going to come over and we're going to talk. I'm going to tell you this crazy story about our friend Danny and what he said. And she's like, no, don't do it. And I'm like, I'm coming over. And she's like, no, you're not. Go over. I call her from like some brick cell phone thing because this is like a long time ago. And I'm like, hey, I'm here. And she's like, no, you're not. I am. I'm knocking on your door. Why aren't you answering? I thought you said you're here. I see your car here. And this is an apartment complex, right? And she's like, no, you're not. I'm like, I'm fucking knocking. You know what? I'm going to check and see if your window opens. Like, I'm buzzed. And I'm like, all right. I pull up. The window actually opens. The thing, the screen pops off. I'm like, sure, look, your screen just popped off so easy. Oh, let me check your window. Oh, shit, your window's open. It slides right up. And I'm like, hey, I'm actually creeping through your fucking window. She's like, no, you're not. You're fucking crazy. No, you're not. And I'm looking at the hallway door. And I'm like, why is that closed? And open it up. And she's, why is your bedroom door closed? Open it up. Turn on the lights. Boom. She's in there with another guy. The guy that used to do the things that I did that I had told her. I was like, I don't trust this guy. What is he bringing you lunch for? Oh, he was just down the road and said that. I'm like, nah, it's suspicious. That don't make sense to me. There were so many things that just didn't make sense to me that I was like, no, you're spending too much time with this guy. I know you're catching feelings. And so, yeah, I caught her naked with him and an open condom wrapper on the side of the bed. And that was a whole thing. That was funny. But I was done with that one. And I was like, you know what? Fuck her, fuck women. Well, not really fuck women. I just wasn't ready to be with anyone then. I wasn't wanting any kind of relationship. And so I had, you know, more fun and, you know, just like, you know, I was a hoe. I was a hoe. And, I was a hoe. Like, I'm like, I don't know, like to have sex. It's just a thing, right? And so I got to experience and experiment and go through that phase. And, And then, let's see, the jail goes through, and now we're into young adulthood, and jail phase kind of simmers down a little bit, and I go to bartending school, because now I want to be a bartender, because, you know, my job before that was, like, working on cars and doing maintenance, oil changes, transmission flushes, and air filters, and shit like that, and I learned a lot, met a lot of people, had a lot of fun doing that, and, and then bartending was calling to me. And I was like, man, like I can get into bartending. I like the nightlife. And if I get out there, then I can meet some more chicks. And who doesn't want to be with like a bartender, make you drinks. And then I'll fix your car. And I was good with like massages. And I was like, man, I think I'll go to massage school too. Like fucking trifecta. Like you can't beat that shit, right? Every woman's dream. And so I'm just trying to be the best man I could be for every woman out there. God's gift to women. And so I go to bartending school. I get out. I get a job at Rainfort. No, wait. Where did I get a job at? I got a job at Bayou on the Riverwalk. And I was there for like 6 months because I immediately, one of the girls that trained me, or the girl that trained me, we were flirting. And then it was her birthday soon after. And it was like, you're going to come with me to my birthday, hang out, meet friends. I'm like, fuck yeah, we have a blast. We dance together, all this stuff. I leave her hanging. I did it on purpose. Like, we went and I gave her a massage. And, like, I didn't even go in for a kiss at all. And it was like we were meeting eye to eye, like I could tell she wanted, but I was like, no. And then that was it. I played too much, and then that, and she went in. We were both hooked, and we got along really great. And then her friends were like, hey, y'all should be together forever and get married. And I'm like, you know what? I'm dumb, and so that sounds like a good idea. And so I proposed with a fucking where did we go? Like a fucking Dave and Buster's. I don't even think there was a Dave and Buster's. It had to be something else. But it was something where I won a Cracker Jack fucking ring, and I proposed with this stupid ring, and she said yes like a dummy as well. And she's from Austin, so she was in the middle of getting her degree from Trinity University, which is a very prestigious school here in San Antonio. Her parents have money. Dads are venture capitalists and stuff like that. And I did not get with her for those reasons. But what happened was we said, all right, well, she got a political science major. And so we went to Austin. And my family's like, you're leaving us? I'm like, dude, it's a fucking hour away. You're crazy. Like, that's not even like, I'm not going across country. I'm literally going an hour away. Texas is big. I can go to the other side of Texas. You should be mad at me. So I'm in Austin, and, you know, we were dabbling with the drugs before we, you know, while I was bartending, some of my friends started getting into heroin, snorting it. And I really liked it. I liked downers and psychedelics. And so, you know, I started playing with heroin a little too much, where I didn't realize that whenever I wouldn't use it, I would feel kind of sick, like I had a cold or something. Just felt like really irritated. Didn't feel that good the day, you know, last couple of days when I'm not, wouldn't use it for a little while. And you know, I introduced my ex-wife, my wife, the one I proposed to, my fiance, into heroin, and we would use it. And you know, it's really good for, you know, women not having any pain, and like it's almost like an aphrodisiac, like you get this really euphoric feeling. And so we would use it, and we would, you know, have sex for hours, and like do all the, you know, these things, and like really go crazy in the bedroom, and we'd like snort some heroin and go fuck. And so that was kind of a thing. I should have warned it. No children, don't be listening to this stuff. My children cannot listen to this stuff. So adults only. Yeah, I need to make this adults only. So we are, you know, in this cycle of, hey, we want to have fun, right? So let's go get some heroin, okay? And then before we leave San Antonio to move to Austin, we noticed that we would both get a little sick. And we're like, all right. So then we go to Austin and obviously don't know anybody to get fucking heroin from. And so we wean ourselves off where it's, I mean, it doesn't take long. Look, at that time, we weren't really hooked. We were just getting those very first, you know, aches and pains that you would get when you're like, okay. Like, knowing now, wow, we should have nipped that shit in the bud. I don't even know what kind of life I would have had. And there is actually a part of me that did nip that shit in the bud. In the bud? In the butt. In the butt. If we cutted it out early. We cutted it out early. Probably still married to her. Who knows? Other parts of me, I can connect to all these different realities and parallel universal me's and just say, give me the best parts of it so I can unify it to my awareness right here and now. And you can do that. So anyway, we go up to Austin. I get a job back into the oil changing business, because, you know, bartending life is not necessarily a married man's life. If she's going to be in the 9-to-5, working for political, you know, whatever in Austin. And so doing that, I wound up meeting a guy, drove through, got his oil change, and I have no fucking clue how it came out that he sells heroin, but that was my dealer the entire time in Austin while I was married. And he would show up, he'd deliver, and like all these really great things as a fucking dealer, made it very convenient for us to get fucking hooked, and had us hooked for the whole time, pretty much the whole time we were married. I mean, we went to rehab and were clean for maybe 3 weeks or something. And, you know, yeah, so that was an adventure, right? So Sarah, my ex-wife, and I are in Austin, hooked on heroin, and we slowly start to descend into almost being homeless, stealing electricity from the laundromat across the sidewalk from our apartment building. And, you know, just like all these not so fun things, right? You know, addiction was very, very rough. And so it split us up, you know. And she made the decision and, you know, like, hey, I'm going to go over here to see this person. And before I know it, she was letting me know that she's not coming back. And it didn't matter whatever I had to do. I was like, what the fuck? I'm getting a divorce. And I just felt so, you know, hurt and lost because I wasn't making any money. I wasn't working. I had to call in family to come and get me and get the furniture, you know, my furniture or whatever I could take, clothes and shit. And family helped me out. My sister that's mad at me helped me out. Both my sisters that they helped me out at that time. And, you know, came back to San Antonio and was still hooked on heroin, got clean a little bit, and then went and stayed with my mom. That's where I got clean because I'm not doing heroin at her place. But not too long after I moved with my brother, because I was clean and doing better, move in with him, find, you know, someone that's doing heroin and meet someone up, and now I'm doing heroin with my buddies again and you know, got into that and really screwed over my brother and just couldn't catch up on. He gave me cash, ex-heroin addict, not too far removed from being a heroin addict, and would give me the cash to go pay the rent. I'm like, I'm going to go get some dope, and I'll just pay the rent later. And so I started putting myself in that cycle. And so anyway, that was a lot of fun. Screwed him over right around my Saturn's return. Or actually, yep, I was 20 years old because I was only 28 days in the rehab. So I called up a friend. She helped me, Elma. She helped me get into the Patrician Movement, which is a free rehab, which her brother had attended and helped get himself clean. And so I went in there, got clean, came out. I attempted twice to reach out to dope dealers and said, if they don't answer, and I did that twice, and they didn't answer. And so I said, all right, let's keep moving. We're not doing that again. And I've only dabbled in it like two times because of a friend that came around that was still using, and he fucking said, hey, can you take me over here? And then before I know it, he's fucking meeting up with a dope dealer. And I'm like, are you kidding me, dude? Did you just score some fucking dope? I thought you fucking needed a ride over here for this, man. Can I try some? I just want to see if it does the same thing. So I fucking did it, right? And so he's in jail. I gotta read the letters that he sent me. I'm, you know, not the best at that in writing. So, I'm glad that he's very patient. He has no choice. So anyway, at the age of 28, my Saturn's return is when I got clean. I started finding more of myself, and you know, then it wasn't too long after that. Right around the age of 30 is when I met my oldest daughter's mom, and working back at Rainforest Cafe, I know I mentioned that earlier by accident, but we'll swing all the way forward to working at Rainforest Cafe after I got myself clean, that I jumped into the service industry and was a server there, made decent money, and stayed with my mom. And I started talking to the girl that was behind the office in the little window. Started flirting a little bit, and before you know it, there we go, and got her pregnant and had a child soon after at the age of 30. And that was my gift. That's Sadie. Like right after I turned 30, a few weeks after, that's when she came through. So she was my gift at the age of 30, and then she left me. Well, okay, let's skip somewhere in there. I left Rainforest Cafe, right? And I started working at a call center. As I was working at the call center, me and her mom got her place, and we're in an apartment. We're on the third floor, and I had already noticed while we were there, there was a young girl that lived below us. I was like, she's cute. All right. Just noted there's a cute girl in the apartment complex. And, you know, me and my ex, we didn't like vibe on the same things. Like she didn't like the, you know, paranormal shit that I liked, and I didn't like the stuff that she liked. And so we drifted apart, and she left, and it was a little difficult for me because I was really getting into this like family pattern. I was really enjoying time with, you know, Sadie growing up and, you know, and stuff like that. So it was a really beautiful time. And when she left, it was even more beautiful. I was able to spend this really intimate time with my daughter and take her to like this nature and go read a book and, you know, just like, you know, just take her to go, we would hug a tree and she'd pick up a roly-poly and give it love. And like, it was just so precious and beautiful. And, you know, I treasure those moments because that was the last time that I was, you know, by myself, you know, in a sense with no partner to like communicate the things I would be thinking or going through. And so it was around that time that I had my spiritual awakening. Right at around the age of 33, and I have a lot of synchronicities within that story that are absolutely astounding and angelic and just, you know, very, very, I don't know what word. It is so beyond this planet and the words that I could use that you'll see if you look at the other places that I have information. That's why I wanted to mention it before. YouTube, TikTok has a complete story. My Facebook, obviously, if you subscribe and tune into this podcast, my Instagram is kind of lacking because it got hacked, and so we're starting over. and we have our online course with Pensight, and so there's a lot of ways that I can get this information out to you, and different pieces of the information, different parts, you know, and so. This spiritual awakening has many parts to it. Once we get into this point, right, it starts to branch out and have a lot of different things and a lot of different people that start to come into play. And this is where your story eventually starts to chime in, because as I go through this and really dig into these different parts of my life, we're going to see some coherence. We're going to be in the same place at the same time. We're going to have the same energy in different places at the same time. And so it's going to be very, very cool. So spiritual awakening, Joni Isinger at 33 years old at Harris Connect call center. She calls in after I'm really depressed about what's happening with my daughter and her mother and, you know, what she was doing, bringing another guy around my daughter and not having a repeat of what I saw as a child with my mom and being promiscuous and going from guy to guy. Because I was like, no, she's going to go be a hoe now that she's never been, like, found herself. You know, I'm talking about my oldest daughter's mom at that time. I just didn't want her to make these decisions, right? And I was scared for what my daughter was going to experience. I didn't want that cycle to happen again, and it didn't. She's still with the guy that I was like, oh no, she's already with someone else and bringing around my daughter. I don't want it to be another guy. And then another guy, she's still with that same first guy. And so I'm happy that is, you know, not an experience for my daughter. A lot of the stuff that I experienced through molestation and being touched inappropriately has not happened for my daughters. I have a 10-year-old and then we have Sadie's 15 now, and they have not had to go through those things like I did. so I'm, you know, we got to bring through better upgraded cycles, right, for our children. And then they're going to do better upgraded cycles that we've done for them. And so this is that thing that we're doing, right, our creations. And we need to create and come together for safe containers for our creation. And so this is where this spiritual awakening and me seeing my daughter as, you know, this driving force of wanting to be the change that I wanted to see in the world and not wanting to just have her in one, you know, property. I didn't even have that notion of off-grid living and stuff like that until Sedona around that time, 11-11-11. And so I'm going to go ahead and end this session right here, and I'm going to come back to the Joni Isinger awakening, official spiritual awakening story at another time. But I want to thank y'all for riding along with this journey. First two episodes are part of the storytelling starting at 11-11-11 spiritual gathering for Starseeds, the download integration sequence for our Cities of Light, and taking you through the process. Second episode gets you up to speed from 1 year from that point. And so episode three, thank y'all for diving into Who Am I? And as we go from Who Am I to episode four on the next one, we are going to dive right back into the actual dates for where we left off episode two. So with that, I want you to love always in all ways. Have a blissful day. Peace.